hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, 720 WGN.
Happy Wednesday afternoon, everyone. 12:11 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Before I even open up her microphone, Terry Savage, I want to get callers lined up. 312-981-7200, because once we start talking, Terry, we're going to forget to plug it. If you've got questions for Terry Savage, get them in, text them in, but we prefer phone calls. 312-981-7200. Terry Savage, it's a big day. Thanks for stopping by today.
Well, it's not only my regular Wednesday, but every once in a while, the Fed meets on Tuesday and Wednesday. And the last time they made real news was coming out of the July 31st meeting. And after we get off the air today, Fed Chairman Jay Powell, there will be an announcement of the Fed Open Market Committee's decision, which is universally 100% on the street expected to be a rate cut of a quarter of a percent. It's already baked into the markets. There are a few people that think it could be more, but not likely. Then the thing is, what will Fed Chairman Powell say about the future?
Okay.
Will he say, and we're watching carefully and we could be persuaded to do another one in December? The language is important. I'm not going to parse those words. They've got computers that actually, the algorithmic traders, parse using artificial intelligence, the words the Fed chairman uses and the number of times he uses them.
What about the tone?
It's the computers getting the tone of this by counting the use of words, and they will institute buy and sell programs in the interest rate market and the stock market. And for all of our listeners, this is like, it's like a home run derby compared to winning Major League Baseball.
Right.
It's just the sidebar entertainment value. We have mortgage rates down, where you and I were just talking about, around 3.7%. Rates have come down dramatically. Perfect time to refi. You should be thinking about your investment portfolio, but not in terms of what happens today.
Right. So here's my question with that, is because I think that a lot of people feel like this is good news. But for me, I'm just like, these are the levers in which the Fed has when we are in trouble to try and spurn the economy on a little bit. By taking this lever down just a little bit to please President Trump or anyone that might be listening.
Fighting words.
Well, I mean, it's a clear reaction to that. At least that's the way I have the read on it. I mean, it just seems like a weak stance for the Fed to take when the economy, look, we've had the yield flipped and we've had some issues looking forward, but, you know, for the most part, jobs numbers still okay. I mean, at least keep it flat. I mean, I just don't see what the point is in lowering it.
Well, I think we're going to nominate you to the Fed Open Market Committee so you can make, there are plenty of Fed governors, several of them, who will make that argument in their meeting. You draw a line down the sheet of paper and talk about the economic news that shows strength in the economy, the news that shows weakness. Today, we had some indications of weakness. We had the chairman of FedEx not only saying our business isn't so good now, but next quarter doesn't look like it's going to be great either. And that's kind of a leading indicator because they ship everything that gets
especially
made.
Their fourth quarter not
exactly.
Looking very good. Yeah.
So you have signs of weakness. You have signs of strength. The job market is strong, et cetera. And that's what the Fed does. They gather information from all over the country, from all their regional banks. And then these five presidents of Federal Reserve Banks and 12 governors form the Open Market Committee, always including the president of the New York Fed and four other Fed presidents. And they've got all their research, all their analysis, and they're going to make a decision. Now, they are damned if they do and damned if they don't when people accuse them of listening to the president's accusations, because if they do cut rates, it's like they caved. And if they don't cut rates, it's like they're being intransigent. This is a different dimension to the Fed now, that because it's because of the attempt to make the Fed the tool of the executive branch.
Right.
When the executive branch, by the way, has its own tools, if it thinks the economy is weak, it can weaken the dollar and spur exports that way. Just go into the Treasury Department can go in to the open markets and impact the dollar. And the legislative branch is supposed to be doing stuff.
Yes.
And they haven't
doing
done stuff.
Yeah.
So The poor Fed.
Yeah. I just, you know, they're supposed to have this brick wall around them when they make these decisions. And humans are humans, of course, and get swayed by opinion, popular or that of a leading figure. I guess my worry is just the precedent it sets, not only for this administration, but for future administrations to see the Fed as a potential lever. Do you think that that could set up future presidents to make the choices where they try and influence them in one way or the other?
Let's just get through this
one. Okay. This is an interactive show, Terry. Not only are we going to take callers, but I'm currently trying to apply for a refinance. You pushed me over the edge.
Because of what I just said?
Yes.
You can do that online, right? You're really doing it?
Yeah, Bennett and I were talking yesterday, and you know, I always go to you for kind of that last little, I need that push, and you gave it to me.
Well, I think even if barring some horrendous recession that sends interest rates negative, which you get a chance to refinance again if that were to ever happen.
Right.
I think we're probably going to be about seeing the low for the move. In fact, the market may react to whatever the Fed chairman says by saying, okay, that was the bottom in rates.
Right. Let's raise them up just a little bit. Yeah, exactly. Either way.
And right now, we should point out, we do when we come back, the Dow's down about 70 points, doing nothing
right now.
Waiting to see what happens.
Similar to what was going on yesterday. All right, let's take the phone calls. Hey, John, you're on with Terry Savage.
Hi, Terry. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a question about annuities. My financial planner and my wife has been trying to push me towards buying into an annuity as a guaranteed retirement income. But my concern is, and I thought you started to talk about it a few days ago, that when the interest rates get lower, it's possible that the insurance companies could go, like, file for bankruptcy or something like that?
No. That's not the concern. The concern is you're paying for your annuity salesman's retirement, not your own. So annuities are a very complex subject. I have nothing against them. And in fact, I always firmly believe the only way to understand something is to own it. So I actually bought some a number of years back. I have a brand new edition. I'm not trying to promote the book, but the brand new edition of The Savage Truth on Money will be out in about 4 weeks. I'm pretty excited because just before I came, I said, okay, that's it, print. So they're getting going right now. And I devote a huge chapter to annuities, and I can't answer your question in 1 minute. However, I want you to read that book and that chapter on annuities. Annuities, equity-linked annuities or indexed annuities, are really rich vehicles for the annuity salesperson. They tie up your money for a long time. They tout protection on the downside against loss with upside potential from the stock market. And yet they restrict your upside potential in a dozen different ways, which I detail in that chapter. So that basically what you wind up getting is a CD-like return from the guaranteed interest rate they promise to pay on your withdrawal account, your investment account. If the stock market soars, believe me, I know this, and you say, oh, great, that was really a cool move. I bought my annuity when the market was low. It's all these funds it's in. It's soared. I'd like to take that money out. There's no way you get that money out. You get a withdrawal schedule that they create. So there's a dozen different ways that annuities work for the salesperson and not for you. I would suggest maxing out your 401k, opening a Roth IRA, and doing your investing that way, and then putting some chicken money on the side. That's your, quote, downside protection, so you can stick with a long-term plan. Now, I just want to address the last quickly, the last thing you said about insurance companies going broke. You know, you have a federal FDIC insurance on your bank deposits. You have something called SIPC, Security Investor Protection Corporation, guarantee in your brokerage accounts, not against making dumb mistakes and losing money, but against malfeasance or the brokerage firm going under. Insurance companies have state guarantee funds that don't really exist until the state insurance commissioner calls on every other insurer doing business in the state to ante up to protect the customers in that state. We would be in a horrendous crisis, and we came kind of close to thinking about it in 2008 if a major insurer went under. And, of course, the government pulled out all the stops to make sure that didn't happen in the case of AIG. So I don't think that I'm hopeful that as long as you buy an annuity, if you do, from a highly rated company, that's not the issue. But the real issue is that the best place to put your money? And in most cases, not all, the answer is no, it's expensive, it's limiting, it doesn't give you the upside, and your withdrawals are subject to the annuity insurance company's schedule of what you could take out.
John, feel good about that?
Yeah, give me some more insight. I guess I'll need to go online and read Terry's column.
Wait, well, when I promise you this, because, I mean, the book will be out and on Amazon. Believe me, I'll make a big deal of it here. That's for sure. This is my favorite place to
be. We don't doubt that.
But it'll be about it'll be about 4 weeks. But I will promise at that point to post a column on annuities.
All right. Very good. Thank you so much, John. Let's go to Bob. Bob, this is kind of a loaded question you got for Terry here.
Yeah. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm retired, just newly within the last year or two, and
congratulations.
Thanks. And I have some of my income, about 45% of it, coming in with fixed tools like Social Security, retirement pension, that kind of thing. And then I have my 401k money, which is an IRA now, and that is supplying the rest of my income. That is invested in the market, either in stocks or mutual funds, or I have a certain amount of it, like about 3 years of it, worth in cash equivalents in case the market goes down. I was thinking about taking some of that money out of the mutual funds and going with an annuity as well as the caller before. And I'm just wondering, does that sound like a safe mix? Or
no. No. Let me back up. When was your last EKG?
It's been a while.
Okay. So here's what I'm going to tell you. We will have another bear market. I have no idea when it'll start. I've been thinking that we were closer than obviously we are. The average bear market loses about 34% of your money. We've had two bear markets in the last 20 years that have, from peak to bottom, declined 53% and taken quite a while to get back. Now, my question to you has to do with, first of all, how your exposure to the stock market and the kind of mutual funds and stocks you own. And if you just took the average loss in the amount that's invested in the stock market, you've said you have liquidity for 3 years. That probably ought to do it unless you panic and sell out at the bottom. So that's number one. Number two, I don't know how you rolled it over, but if you rolled it over to someplace low cost like Fidelity or Vanguard and had a variety of funds, that might be okay as long as you have the discipline not to sell at the bottom. And then when you brought up the word annuity, there's absolutely no reason, although I have examined this, to buy an annuity inside your IRA rollover. First of all, you already got tax shelter. Okay, it's going to come out of ordinary income and come out of your annuity as ordinary income. So you're not, beware of those promises of downside protection, upside potential. So put it in your IRA rollover. Don't do that.
All right, Bob, you got that?
Got it.
All right, thanks so much. Terry, I can't believe it. We're already out of time today.
No, you've got to be kidding.
I'm not kidding you.
Wait, all the annuity salesmen are those people rushing the door to come and get me. Could you get some protection on the way out?
Yeah, we'll take out the back entrance. Yeah, Terry, as always, thanks so much for stopping by. I think you are just such a level-headed person when it comes to this. You kind of issue some calm in moments of at least my personal stress, and I appreciate that.
Finish that refi.
That's what I was doing. I was like, I'm glad you got the show under control, because I'm doing about that. You ever had a White Claw, by the way, Terry?
What?
A White Claw drink. It's like a seltzer beverage.
Well, have alcoholic?
You... Yeah. No?
Later.
Okay. Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand until 1 o'clock. Then John Williams takes over. You know the drill, everyone. Okay, talking with Josh Noel from the Chicago Tribune. Josh, how are you doing here today?
Doing great. Always happy to talk some hard seltzer. I'd rather talk beer, but
right.
But hard seltzer works.
And you've been on this beat for the Tribune for quite a while now.
I've been doing beer writing for the Tribune for 10 years.
What a tough life you lead.
I know. Someone's got to do it. And the beer industry in Chicago has bubbled up, let's say,
that's good.
During the last decade, and it's been a fascinating thing to watch and chronicle, and people are interested in it, so I'm happy to tell those stories.
Something that could be popping that bubble while we're the hard seltzer trend. I mean, if you blinked, you missed it, or didn't miss it, but you missed the start of it. But this summer, I had a party I was telling you during the break. Every year, I gather a lot of my friends, college friends, neighbors, all this stuff, cook a bunch of tacos for everyone, and everyone just brings their own beer. And my fridge always ends up packed, but you know, they, I always look and, you know, halfway through the party, you get some beers in there, you know, maybe a lot of club soda or tonic water for mixers. This year, from top to bottom, it was White Claws and Truly's. Yeah. And that's not just here. I mean, that is a growing, huge boom in this business.
It is a real thing, and I've heard a version of that story again and again and again this summer. People marveling at how people are walking home from the grocery store with a 12-pack of White Claw under their arm, or yeah, Truly, but we seem to be a White Claw town. And exactly what you said, that the hard seltzer's showing up at the beach and in coolers and in people's fridges, and it's taken over this summer.
What's it replacing? Because obviously, I would assume that most people kind of have their amount that they drink. Obviously, it varies here or there. But if they're drinking that, they're choosing that over something else.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the most interesting question to me right now. And if I'm able to corner a hard seltzer drinker, I almost feel bad for them. But because I say, okay, so what would you have been drinking a year ago if you weren't drinking this right now? Okay, what else might you have been?
Yeah.
So I'm obsessed with that question because it's fascinating. Yeah. There's this shift going on right now. And pretty much if you're drinking hard seltzer, that means you were drinking something else instead a year ago or 2 years ago. The most common answer, well, there isn't an answer. There are several answers. It's often light beer.
Mm-hmm.
We're a big Miller Lite town, as you know. So Miller Lite is, you know, not necessarily thrilled. Cider,
yeah,
is taking it on the chin a little bit. Wine.
Really?
Spirits.
Yeah, that makes sense. Spirits, yeah.
And a little bit of craft beer. But that's sort of more the entry-level exploratory craft beer drinker, it appears.
Right.
Craft beer is a very different proposition than what hard seltzer offers.
Completely
whereas
different.
Miller Lite, not so much,
yeah,
really. I mean, you think about the reasons you drink Miller Lite, they're going to be sort of akin to what you might be drinking.
Yeah, you don't want it to be too heavy.
Exactly.
Too
you want something refreshing, something you can sort of just drink and not think a ton
right
about. Whereas if you want an IPA, you want an IPA.
Is there, this is a loaded question, but hard seltzer, I mean, it could be naturally coming towards a decline only because it had gotten so popular. Oh, it's become a meme in many ways. We're getting to cooler seasons here in Chicago. Do you see this going away or do you see this growing trend continuing?
Yeah, that's the huge question. So
yeah,
there's no hint of a slowdown really at all. Hard seltzer is up. The whole category is up about, I want to say, 250-300% this year. White Claw is up about 250% or so. What I can tell you about the winter, that is a very natural question. Will this slow down over winter?
Yeah.
Who wants to drink this stuff in January in
right
Chicago?
I want a bourbon.
But people still drink Miller Lite in January in
that's
Chicago,
true,
right?
Right.
So what I can tell you is that everyone I talked to said last winter they expected a bigger drop-off than there was.
Mm-hmm.
That the category was more immune to the seasons than they thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that's going to also be the case this winter. The question is, 5 years from now,
yeah,
what's that going to look like? Hard Seltzer had its sort of, for me, the holy cow moment was sitting at Wrigley Field a couple weeks ago at a game. And, you know, I mean, the vendors walk around selling beer. And
mm-hmm.
That's the way it's been for generations, literally. But 2 weeks ago, I was at a game, and there's a guy walking around selling hard seltzer.
Oh, man.
So, you know, there's still the Bud products and Goose Islands out there, but there's also the hard seltzer vendor, which that's just blew my mind. That is the ultimate affirmation of mainstream acceptance.
That's a good one to yell, too, as a vendor. You know, what?
Seltzer!
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, it's not White Claw. It's the Anheuser-Busch version, which is
version.
Bon and Viv, because they've got that the vendors on lockdown thanks to their marketing.
Yeah, who
deal,
owns White Claw, by the way?
White Claw, actually, it's a local brand, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, there's a company called Mark Anthony Brands. They're based here in Chicago. Their big hit to date was Mike's Hard Lemonade. And they know a thing or two about how to flavor a beverage.
See,
that
Mike's,
is what they do, unlike, you know, a lot of the beer makers.
See, Mike's Hard Lemonade and Smirnoff Ices, those were a little bit bigger when I was in college. They went through a little thing. And I don't know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but at least a lot less people that I know drink that now. I just wonder, you know, these things do kind of ebb and flow for a little
bit.
Oh,
big time. And I should point out that Mike's Hard is an FMB, flavored malt beverage, and White Claw is taking share from that, too. So Mark Anthony Brands is cannibalizing themselves
cool
a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. All right, so there was the big story out last week, White Claw shortage. It was
right
very memeable. So was there really?
No.
Okay. Marketing ploy?
No, I don't think they even get the credit for being evil geniuses or anything like that. I think it's just a case of the media. Sorry, I'm part of the media, but
yeah,
but sort of someone sort of not completely understanding what they were writing necessarily. So there is a shortage in terms of is there enough to satisfy all the demand in the market? Probably no, not quite. But as a result, White Claw is on what they call allocation in the industry. So something, there's endless amounts of Bud Light and Miller Light and Corona and Pacifico and Modelo, et cetera, in the market, right? Like you can go in any store, get it anytime. There's more than enough. There's not more than enough White Claw. Therefore, it is on allocation with its distributors. And that means it goes out in sort of a measured flow into the market. But the people who distribute beer are professionals, and the people who sell beer are professionals. So they know how to do something like an allocation and make sure that when you walk into your store, odds are good you're going to see a White Claw. That said, still being on allocation was sort of maybe misunderstood a little bit by who wrote that story as a national shortage, which sounds very dire.
Right.
So, yes, technically, officially, there probably is somewhat of a shortage, but the industry is dealing with it in a way that consumers don't need to run out and stock up on White Claw.
They have control over the valves.
Yes, exactly. And I'm sure White Claw loved that publicity. And then, of course, everyone ran with it because it's a great headline, right?
Right.
National White Claw shortage. Oh, my God. But it's just so I threw a little water on that fire. For the trip.
We appreciate that. Of course, Josh writes for Beer and the Chicago Tribune, is the author of Barrel Age Stout and Selling Out, Goose Island, Anheuser-Busch, and How Craft Beer Became Big Business. We got to talk more about that some other time, but we're out of time, Josh. Thanks for stopping by.
This is fun. Thanks.
Come by again. Enjoy the view.
And you bring the hard seltzer.
I will.
Actually, don't.
All right, here comes the Winter's Business Minute here on WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Chicago's a big financial hub. We have a number of large industry players in our backyard. We're centrally located, and we crank out fintech at a pretty solid rate. But one of the granddaddies of the industry is the CBOE, and they shared some news this week. We touched on this in the Wintrust Business Lunch yesterday, but it's worth noting if you missed it. The Chicago Board Options Exchange is moving their headquarters and trading floor to the old post office building. They'll take up 185,000 square feet of the 2.3 million that's available. They're hands down the leaders in the options industry as one of the main option trading platforms in the world.
I want 20 call options at 75! 20 call options at 75!
And I know that's great news for them, but let's keep ourselves grounded here. There is still a big old elephant in Chicago, and that's the pension hole in the city. We've been chipping away at it because times have been good, but according to Cranes, we still have $240 billion to pay off. The worst in the country. California is next to us with $230 billion, but they're more than triple our size. Maybe we need an incubator just to figure this thing out. I'm Bennett Wake Night, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
WGN. All right, we just got done talking about booze, so naturally we should move over to pot, and that's as good of an introduction as you're going to get. Frank Sennett joining us right now. Frank, how are you doing today?
Good. Isn't it usually the other way around?
Yeah, right? That's a good point. Frank, of course, the Director of Digital Strategy at Crane's Chicago Business, a great follow on Twitter as well. Frank, I really enjoyed your quote tweet that you had yesterday. I forgot to pull it up right now. But basically the idea that Lori Lightfoot doesn't want to sell pot or have pot sold downtown, and then you said something like, tell that to the guy on the pedway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you walked around the Loop recently, at least I have encountered at lunchtime and various times during the day, there's a lot of people openly smoking weed in the downtown business district, but we won't be selling it officially downtown, apparently.
Yeah, and so walk us through, we see the parameters here at the map. I'm looking at the website now. We're essentially talking about a real large swath of the downtown area, but I imagine Alderman O'Reilly might have some objection to this, as this kind of cuts out a lot of potential tourists downtown.
That's true. So they're trying to spread it around. There are going to be 91 licenses to Chicago sellers initially, which when you compare it to other big cities that have pot, is fairly small. So that number will probably grow over time. There are more than 150 in Los Angeles. And Denver, which is less than half the size of Chicago, has more than 500 dispensaries. So there may be a sweet spot somewhere in the middle there. But as you say, all the downtown district and River North will be banned from having these under the proposal.
Wait, why is that? What is the reasoning behind it?
Well, I think it's, she says safe and responsible implementation of legalized cannabis. And the design is to ensure we don't have oversaturation in a particular zone, is what the city leaders are saying. The seven zones were created in a way to have equal distribution of dispensaries for the population. But again, there's just the big blank spot downtown.
Yeah, I mentioned tourism, but I mean, come on, let's say someone is in, you know, enjoying cannabis and that's their right to do so after January 1st. Maybe they live in the burbs, they work downtown, and they want to go on their lunch break to go bring some home. I'm just speaking out loud here, not from any personal experience, but doesn't Chicago want that revenue, that tax revenue, or is it all tied to the state as a whole anyways?
Yeah, I mean, you make a compelling point, and we've all seen at the metro stations, the people taking their go cups of big cans of beer onto the metro cars. You know, maybe they want to take a big fatty on there as well.
Yes, exactly. And so potentially some missed revenue. A part of this also is what I think makes sense to me, although I don't know if it's just an archaic way of thinking, that cannabis will not be able to be consumed in public spaces by anyone in terms of like just the right of way walking by. That's part of what Mayor Lightfoot wants, right?
Yeah, and of course, it's still illegal for non-medical use as we speak.
Yes.
And like I say, you see more and more. It seems to be kind of one of those jaywalking things now. There are a lot of people doing it out in the open in the loop that I've seen this summer.
Absolutely. All right, Frank, you think the Cubs are going to?
It's not just for concerts anymore, my
yes.
friend.
Yes, no, it isn't. I mean, and honestly, like I don't know if it's just my eyes are open, my olfactory nerves are open a little bit more to it. But I've even noticed. I live up on the north side in Lakeview. Man, I can't go on a walk without smelling it and people doing it. Maybe that's always been the case, and I just missed it. But I do feel like that, even though it isn't legal yet, people are starting to feel a little bit more emboldened to do it.
I think so. I think you're right.
All right, Frank, I was asking you before when I cut you off, you think the Cubs are going to sweep the Cards this weekend?
I sure hope so. Yeah. It would be very nice to see a Cubs-Braves NLDS.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, Frank, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it as always.
Thanks for having me.